is the first item. Substantive item. And then deal with the other substantive matters. We're not doing well with the, you know, finalizing our minutes. You can see that we still have the minutes as old as about a year ago. That so not that we have not been dealing with the issues, we have been isolating issues from those minutes. So on issues, we're not behind. I must confirm that on issues we're not behind, but it's on approving the minutes that we are a bit behind. The house chair is not so happy with the progress we're making in this respect. It is in that regard that we are giving them a primary slot, so that there's just no way that we could finish a meeting without having considered and adopted them, because they're first on the first, a first item on the agenda. Colleagues, so this is the program. The program was adopted long time ago, except the minutes, anyway, minutes are a standing item on any agenda item. It should be like that. But colleagues, having looked at that, and Brian, may I welcome all of you, and thank you for taking your time out to be here. Brian, are we, let me just first check if we do have the quorum. Are we correct, Brian?
Indeed, Chair, we do form a quorum.
We do form a quorum. The 3rd of March 2020. Brian, can you flag them? Was the briefing by the Defense Department of Defense on their second and third quarterly report. We also received an update on the irregular and related matters, and we also received a briefing by AMSCO on progress regarding the establishment of all right, so this is attendance to reach the colleagues. Go down, Brian. Go down, Brian. All right. All right. So these are the approve those minutes. Just go down. All right. So this is a briefing by the DOD. And right, go down, Brian. Yeah, checking. Please indicate where there are corrections that you want there, please. It was underlined. Where is underlined, Brian? Please attend to those areas. I mean, the basic ways. It's flat, red. Colleagues, right.
The department is having the following officials: Mr. Matafu, Ms. Murolo, the Jito, Ms. Zuguda, Mr. Siengo, senior manager in the office of the DG, Ms. Moesodi, the CFO, Mr. Rampele, who is dealing with planning, and Mr. Musi. Those would be the officials representing the department.
Okay. No, thank you very much. And so you will be, are you in a position to brief us about the status of filling the post of the Data General? Where are you, and what is holding you back from filling the post.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The department did advertise the post of the Director General in January. Interviews were conducted, but a suitable candidate was not found in that round. It then went again for advertisement, and they closed on the 26th of February, and shortlisting was done last Saturday, and interviews will be commencing on Monday. So we are on course, Chairperson, and I'm sure we will be able to recruit a permanent Director General. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. Right, so let me then invite you to take us through the item. We're looking at your second quarter and third quarter budget performance report. The platform is now yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning again, and good morning to honorable members and colleagues. Chairperson, the presentation will be done by Mr. Siengo, who is the Acting Director General for Corporate Services. Planning normally happens in that environment. It's the right person to do that presentation. And the one on database will be done by Mr. Matafu, is the Chief Director responsible for database. Thank you very much. Chairperson, and over to you, Mr. Siengo.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Mafu. Can I maybe confirm if the presentation...
Yes, we can see it. If you can eliminate the preview slides on the side.
Is it final term?
No, just eliminate the previous slides on the side so that it leaves you with one slide on the screen.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, we just do this.
Thank you so much. It's better now.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the honorable members. As indicated, my name is Sandisa Siembo, and I will be taking you through this presentation on quarter two and three. It's a combined presentation for both quarters. And this is just an opening slide. I'm not listening to General Gravish. This is the outline of the presentation. And then the purpose is just to appraise the Portfolio Committee of Defense and Military Veterans about the department's performance for both quarters, that is quarter two and three, 2021. And this is just, we normally reflect on this just to remind Chair and Honorable Members in terms of what we're expected to do as a department in terms of our mandates, is that we must, as a department, provide national policy and standards to support military veterans and their dependents. If MV approves program structure, programs, administration, socio-economic support, government stakeholder management. In those areas, chief staff and units that enable us to deliver in terms of and I must just indicate that in terms of support, which is program two, that most of the benefits that is, and in terms of then because of the presentation today, it's for quarter two and three. I will start then talk and then I'll go then and present the summary for quarter three. In terms of quarter two, the department achieved 57% of what it was supposed to be of it. We had planned to achieve 14 targets. We were only able to achieve 8 of those targets. And if you look at the table, Chair and Honourable Members, this is the breakdown in terms of the programs that for quarter two, administration did in terms of the planned targets for quarter two achieved all of its targets. For SES, program two, socioeconomic support services, they achieved 2 out of 5. For empowerment and stakeholder management, out of the 5 that they planned for quarter two, they achieved 2, which makes them that 57% for quarter two. And when we look at quarter three, the performance then went down. Out of 13 targets that were planned, apartments, 6 were achieved. When you then look in terms of the program administration, is that has planned. Program 2, which is socioeconomic support, achieved 2 out of 5 that they planned. And empowerment and stakeholder management achieved 3 out of 5 that they planned, which then makes that 46%. That's quarter 3. And this is then just a graphical representation in terms of how then the department is progressing from until quarter 3. In quarter 1, we're sitting at 30% as a department. Quarter 2, we improved 7%. And quarter 3, we moved. And also, what I want to do now is to maybe before I chair and honourable members, before I go down or I go and present then failed reasons for the why the department has achieved it, I want us to take you through the initial information early on in the presentation, so that you can beginning to compare. In terms of the performance and also in terms of comparing the performance and the budget or the spend. So this is how then the department has fed in that is the budget that has spent for quarter two. In total, the department only spent 23% of its budget for quarter two at the end of quarter two. It had only spent 122 million rands, 968,000 of its budget of 546,073,000. So in terms of the breakdown then, this is in terms of the programs, we have also managed to do that disaggregation to show that at end of quarter two, administration had only spent 40% of its budget. Socioeconomic support had only spent 15% of its budget. And then empowerment and stakeholder management had only spent 23% of its budget. And when we move then to quarter three, see a bit of improvement, 23% of end of December, admitted spent 9% of its budget, which 137,539,000. And in terms of breakdown, in terms of programs, with administration was sitting on 65%, socioeconomic support was sitting on 45%, and empowerment and stakeholder management was sitting on 40%. And this table then would, in terms of economic classifications, for both quarters, and now as I indicated, overall for quarter two it was 23%. It was 49%. For quarter two, you begin to see then that in terms of economic classification, the department has been doing very well in terms of compensation of employees, even though the expectation is that at mid-year level is that we're supposed to have at least spent about 50% of for the cost of employees. But they are, at that time, there were vacant positions, especially at the senior management level, which led us to have spent about 44% of our budget. And then goods and services were very slow in terms of the department in quarter two, and also in terms of payment of capital assets. But then you begin to see an improvement in quarter three in terms of the spend, where I think, as I indicated, most benefits would sit in transfers and subsidies, which the department is responsible for, and also, so you're beginning to see an improvement around that area of work. And also, when you also see in terms of programs, I think programs are picking up in terms of their spend in comparison also to the target that I had reported earlier on as a summary. And if then I focus then on this, is it 31st December 2020 at the end of quarter? Compensation for which now, as I indicated earlier on, most of the benefits are sitting. Compensation for aged and military veterans, 7% of the allocated budget was spent. Social relief of distress, only 27% had been spent. You remember that since the announcement of the relief or the social relief of distress by the president when the lockdown was announced, the department has been topping up the 350 that have been paid to for military veterans to 1.2. So that is that item that is budgeted for them. And then in terms of education support, was already spent 60% of the budget. And then healthcare support, which is a benefit that is in demand currently in the department, was spent 60% of that budget at the end of quarter, in December, at the end of quarter three. And then housing support, only 4% of the budget has been spent. Here, maybe let me, in terms of, I'll summarize at the end. In skills development, only 31% of the budget has been spent. And then in terms of barrel support, we're doing quite well here in terms of barrel support, 82% of that budget has already been spent. I must indicate that, the biggest challenge, with the department in terms of the slow spend has been that the department relies on service providers, in the sense that it's both service providers and also other sister departments to actually implement some of these benefits. For example, in terms of housing, we have to rely on the provincial human settlements departments to provide us with invoices once happy letters have been issued. And when we don't then receive those invoices from this provincial department of human settlements, then it affects our spend as a department. Similarly also to issues regarding to healthcare. We rely on on SPAMs to provide us with invoices. And usually when these invoices come, they don't come immediately after the service has been provided. You would be invoiced at any time given time when I think the colleagues have prepared those invoices. So it really affects our planning in terms of the spends. Hence, you begin to see that there's a variance between what we anticipate to spend as a department versus what we anticipate to have projected to spend as a department versus what actually happens on the ground. However, I think as a department going forward, we have discussed this in terms of improvements. We are going to improve in terms of our relationship with the stakeholders, and also furthermore, we are going to invest in terms of our ICT infrastructure so that we because most of these invoices are dealt with by officials, the manual process that we need to go through these invoices. I think then once we begin to implement a proper ICT infrastructure, then we'll have a seamless submission and processing of these invoices. And if then, Chair, I move to itself, this is the color coding that I'll be using, which indicates how we've determined this is just a summary. I've touched based on this, go to the details. In terms of PPI 101, there's a mistake here, Chair and Honourable Members. This PPI 101 will only be reported in, because we are currently busy now with the audit. So as I indicated, only one make invoices paid within 30 days. In terms of the ICT strategy and the HR strategy, they were not approved at end of quarter three, because there were still that we needed to meet as a department internally. However, I must indicate that as we speak currently, both these strategies have gone through all the processes internally in the department, and they should be approved end of the processes in terms of quality assurance has been complete. And when I move then to program two, and support services, I indicated here that only three targets have been matched. Program two. And I will only focus, Chair and Honourable Members, if you allow, those targets that have not been achieved. And in some cases here, you would see that some of the indicators, we will only report on them in quarter four because we don't have any targets for those indicators, which is something you will begin to see in the new plan. I think 2021-2022, that we have attempted now to have quarterly targets in every indicator that we have, so that we are able to track these indicators on quarterly basis. And in terms of the database, the number of military veterans captured in the database, we have not achieved here. This is a manual, because currently in the department we don't have that integrated database functional as yet. We were still doing a manual process, and most I think the biggest impact here has been the fact that because these boxes are sitting here in the department, or applications are sitting here in the department, in the building, and most officials have been working from home during that particular time. So we have not really been able then to process this. However, I think now with restrictions being lowered, I think we'll begin to see improvement. I think the issue of the restrictions being lowered and the allowance or the mobility now of officials coming into the building, you will see, you will pick it up that across all our indicators that it becomes a factor. And I think now with the lower levels of restrictions and more officials coming into the building, we'll begin to see improvement in terms of our performance for quarter four. Then in terms of the number of military veterans approved for pension, here we're supposed to have the policy approved. Because if you remember, Chair and Honorable Members, we were expected to do a pilot this year for this indicator. However, because of the budget cuts, I think earlier on in the financial year, we then decided that perhaps what we should focus on with this particular benefit is to finalize the policy. We are at an advanced stage. We have brought in Department of Social Development, National Treasury, and Government Pensions Agency to assist us to finalize this policy. We have been working with them, and we should, I think, by the end of the financial year, have this policy in place, which I think is also one of the priorities that have been identified in the presidential task team conversation. And then when we talk to subsidized support, it's a similar issue here, where we wanted to have support, but then we dropped the pilot because of the budget. Earlier when we were doing the amendments to the plan, here we were then wanted to focus on ensuring that we finalize the policy and we put in place mechanisms. We work with the Department of Transport to disperse these benefits. We have been working with them. They've provided us with officials that we can communicate with. So we also, you will see in the new plan for next year that we then, because here we were also planning to have a pilot, I think it was planned for around January, February last year, but then when COVID came, it was suspended until further notice. So we are now planning to resuscitate that to ensure that then, because this particular benefit on the subsidized public transport, I think the key issue here is how it's going to be rolled out, because it involves a lot of stakeholders in terms of municipalities, in terms of service providers for the transport. So it's critical for us that we ensure that we get it right. These are then the ones that I said we have achieved, which is the total number of access for military veterans to healthcare, and then the one of military veterans that have been provided with access to counseling and treatment. When we move to the last program, program 3, I indicated here that three of the five targets have been achieved, and honorable members. The challenge here with program HA is that most of the benefits in this, especially even on program 2, is that they require contact, and because of then the restrictions, it's difficult for us to interact with military veterans because of the lockdown restrictions. However, what has happened here, in this program, what we have done is that in these benefits, we have mostly been relying on military veterans to come to us and apply for these benefits, for skills, whether it's for companies to be placed and all those things. But what we have done now in the department, there's an initiative that we have started in this financial year where we actually go out as a department to provinces and we do what we call roadshows through what we call Operation Hlasela, where we encourage, we organize military veterans in certain areas, and then we then understand their needs, and then we register them for whatever needs that they require in terms of skills, whether in skills and training, or military veterans companies. And also, what we normally do for companies of military veterans, we have satisfied ourselves in terms of the fact that a company belongs to the military veterans, we then submit the companies for consideration to our sister departments for opportunities. But then we really don't have a mechanism to follow up on whether the military veterans have been provided with business opportunities in those particular provinces. I mean, in those particular sister departments. So I think these are the issues that I wanted to reflect on in program. Then PBI 306 was discontinued because of the budget. However, with this PPI now, we're currently working with the Sports, Arts and Culture, because they are the custodians of this. How then do we come in as a department and ensure that we participate and we ensure that we honor our military veterans through the programs, the bigger programs that they would be having in that department? Then these are just statistics, Chair and Honorable Members, in terms of our human resources. I think as indicated by Mrs. Mafu, that the post of the general has been advertised and we're on course to fill that post. I must also confirm, Chair and Honorable Members, the other senior posts that were advertised this week, 2 weeks back, in the DDG Socioeconomic Support Services and also DDG Corporate Services. And I think it was the other two that were advertised, I think 2 or 3 weeks back. It was Director Human Resources Management and Director Legal Services. So we are on course in filling senior positions in the Department of Stability. And we still have a problem in terms of contract employees. We still, as a department, are relying, we have a lot of contract employees in our employ, which we hope that with the work that we are doing now with the Department of Public Service Administration, National Treasury, and DOD in terms of organizational redesign, that problem will be addressed. And interns, we have about 16 interns in our employ, that is ending. And we were then expected also, like in terms of what
the interruption, I'm not too sure if I'm the only one experiencing it. Colleagues, are you okay? You don't experience any interruption?
There is a lot of backup, Chair. It's cutting off. It's cutting.
Yeah, and Mr. Marais, on your side? All right.
On my side, I'm also experiencing the breakdown.
Is it? Yeah, quite a lot.
Yeah. On my side as well.
So it confirms that it's on the side of it's happening on the side of the department. If you can improve your network, okay. Back to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think these are just the last two slides in terms of the COVID interventions. They focus on internally in terms of the employees. and also the focus in terms of interventions that we've done for military veterans. And you'd see that we, as at end of December last year, we had 7 cases that were reported, and there was unfortunately 1 fatality. One of our colleagues had passed on, and it was reported that 19 employees came into contact with people that have that were positive at that particular time, and they had to quarantine as per the regulations. And the DMV, in terms of what was expected, had procured the PPPs as required for both our headquarters and provincial offices. And then offices were also sanitized. There was also an NGO that was assisting us to do this, which was as every time that we would have a positive case, they would come into the building and then assist us to sanitize the building and make it ready for employees. Then in the building, of course, we would have then screening when employees are coming in, and also we encourage social distancing. And then as of December last year, we had spent around 2,000 for internal purposes. Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, what is not reflected here is that this presentation is that in terms of military veterans, indicated the government has been participating where we're paying military veterans the relief of distress. I might not have the figure. I think the CFO would be able, maybe during the question and answer session, to provide those figures in terms of how many military veterans were actually assisted during that particular time. All in all, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you,
very much for the presentation. Mr. Mafu, do you want to say anything before I open it up for discussion?
Chair, thank you very much for referring to me as Mr. Mafu.
Miss Mafu. Right.
No, I think, Chair, the presentation in terms of the department is more depicting a slow pace of service delivery that translates to a slow pace of budget budget spent. But Chair, it is my wish that the department can actually be put in the same room with various departments whom we've got strong dependencies, because otherwise, if we were to do everything ourselves, I am sure, honorable members, that our expenditure would actually be better than it is per quarter. What we experience, and I'll take SAMS as an example, what we experience is that we get duplicate invoices, and our officials are busy looking at those because they've got to consider very, very clear on what they are processing. Remember, Chair, that these are auditable processes, and if we don't exercise thoroughness in dealing with the invoices, we might actually be forced to discipline people on things that are actually as a result of another department. So the slow pace of processing with SEMS is informed by duplicate invoices mainly, and the late response of submission of those invoices. With Human Settlement, we have an MOU with National Human Settlement, but we have SLAs with different departments, and the service delivery happens in provinces. But there's also a very slow pace in terms of us getting those invoices. So there are four benefits that are funds dependable. It's welfare, it's health and welfare, it's a dedicated counseling, it's a compensation. No, there are three. So, and health on its own, it's got a 95 million attached to it. So if we experience just on health, that 95 million, no pace of invoicing, then we remain challenged in Jefferson. That is what I would want to say for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much, colleagues. Udaba loses Thebeni, now it's your turn to raise questions. I have Mr. Maliaki Shelembe and Mr. Teko Mafanya. Those two honorable members. I'll start with you, Shelembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the presentation. Well, Chairperson, well, it's a good presentation with some concerns that need some good attention, because Chairperson, I was looking to the issue of that socio-economic support in quarter two, where it's clear that their spending was very, very, very low. But Chairperson, why I'm paying more attention on that? Well, we know that it is the responsibility of the government to ensure that people have food on their stomach. Now, if, say, we did not spend, in that allocation, it means someone who was supposed, to get assistance or to get food did not get food at that time. I know there may be many reasons that may be put forward because of the COVID-19, this and that. But I'm trying to see what other attempts that were made by the department to ensure that, what is made available for those people to have a food on the table, was given, a priority as something that is important as required by our own constitution of the country. Chairperson, I'm concerned. I don't know what they can tell us that. What if they look at that low expenditure? What do they see in terms of saying how many people did suffer from the military veterans because of their, and what is being done to ensure that these people are made aware why there was such a delay in spending to assist them? I'm happy, Chairperson, when the issue of the Operation Chapella is raised, especially with regard to provinces. But before we go to that, Chairperson, I just want to know from the department, who is responsible to assist the military veterans if, say, number of correspondences are submitted to the officials that are relevant to their request, but they do not get answers on time? Now, who is responsible to ensure that what is stated in the Military Veterans Act as well as the regulations, are adhered to? Because it seems now people keep on crying, but nobody is checking to see to it of the application or of the request that has been submitted to the department. Are they in line when it comes to response by the department with the Military Veterans Act and the regulation? Because I've noticed that some people have been trying to communicate with the department, but they are not getting the joy, and then they go out now to seek for assistance. Who is there, stationed to ensure that, delays are prevented when it comes to this application? And also, Chairperson, I saw that the issue of the PPEs, if I heard correctly, they say only Limpopo and KZN have received, their PPEs. So it means other provinces have not received anything from that. if possible, maybe to be informed when those PPEs were given to KZN, were received by KZN, and also Limpopo. Why other provinces up until now have not received, I mean, those PPEs? Let me stop here, Chairperson, for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shelembe. Mr. Mafanya.
Thank you very much, colleagues.
Mr. Mafanya. Can you kindly...
You can hear me?
No, I can hear you clearly. Can you kindly remove the presentation on the screen so that I can see the clicks?
I'm challenged.
Yeah, no. You are perfectly okay. I was asking the department to the presentation. Thank you so much. Over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for the presentation. Well put. Some deficiencies here and there. I wanted to find out from the presenters the number of DMV offices that we have nationwide, because naturally that you find people always flocking to Pretoria for assistance, and then they don't get joy because of the kind of treatment and services that they get there, and then that it's prompted by the PPEs as well. And the other thing on the issue of military reference companies that are given to provinces as well as municipalities, it's announced that they do not happen because there's no follow-up, there's no way to say, you have put these people on the data, provincial data, or municipalities, and their companies are not even attended to. That alone doesn't bode well for military reference. Now, on the spending of 27% on social distress, housing 4%, and skills of 31%, there's lack of agency on those areas, which at some point, we have had a couple of meetings where we find that people do die without having received their, what is due to them anyway. At some point, you can even see the rate and deaths that has been serviced. People have been paid for accordingly. We are talking about the living. Who relies heavily on those monies that have survived. Now, on the issue of housing, the system partners, in particular municipalities, other municipalities are under administration. And the AG's report also is not good well for a lot of municipalities. Now, if you rely on municipalities to give some direction, whereas they are also in the red, there is no way that service delivery can happen on the spot. So we need to look into that as well. So I want to find out from your side, what will be the backup plan, because where you get the hurdles and things do not happen, and you cannot just say, no, we are sitting with money and we can spend them and then there are bottlenecks next year and then. There must be a solution to that, but because we are talking about human beings here who are suffering. Then, Chair, I think I need to pause there, but those are the concerns that I have. So if you can give clarity, because I've just heard what they don't have plans to rid off of such malfeasance in the system companies, in the system department. So, and equally on the terms that there is the delay of invoices that is going to come from different entities so that they are able to pay within that 30-day period. The reality is that there's something amiss there, because there are people, and then at some point you find people even going for protest action. DMV people going on protest action, whereas there is money to be spent on that. So we also highlight such issues that it is not on. They have to be addressed promptly and seriously. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mafanya. Ms. Vickers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Yes,
can you hear me, sir?
Yes, it's your turn, Honourable Vickers.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we must admit that there is improvement in some of the targets, and we appreciate it. Chair, I do understand the challenge that they must rely on departments, but I don't think that to improve the relationship will help. Our military veterans are struggling, and especially now during the pandemic and the conditions that they are living in because of red tape in the department. Chair, my question is, will they have a dedicated official who will focus on the relationship between the departments, or how are they planning to achieve this? So, will there be someone who just focus on the submission of invoices and things? And how will they monitor the effectiveness? And do they have time frames to measure the impact of the proposal of better relationships? Because the struggle of military veterans to get the benefits makes them vulnerable, and it leaves room for everyone to come and promise them everything, the moon and the stars even. Then secondly, Chair, what is the struggle with the HRM strategy? Are there any specific reasons why they're not concluding it? And then lastly, Chair, in most of the reasons that they provide is due to COVID, but no one knows how long we will be with this pandemic. So what progressive plans do the department have to address some of the issues? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bukas. I think that takes care of the list of speakers I recorded. Now, thank you very much. There is no comment from my side, except to say that I'm happy that the situation in the department is receiving the attention of the president. And it was reported previously, I think it was at our workshop, that a number of work streams have been created to focus in certain segments or areas of weaknesses in the department. Last, the committee said it, I think it was last year, around September, October or so, that the department was experiencing a serious structural and systemic challenges, and that until those challenges were addressed, we will not see improvement in the performance of the department, and the outcomes I hear for all of us to see. The budget is severely underspent, with a number of targets not met. So number of the department is by its own admission, it says its performance is under 50%, and they are blaming this partly to the pandemic. But I accept that, but I accept that because most departments were affected. But that this department was, you know, heavily affected, as we have seen, to me it's a testimony to a deeper problem. But we have already diagnosed that problem. That is structural and systemic. And that until those problems have been attended to and resolved, would continue to have the challenges that we experiencing in the department. Its budget was cut by over 100 million rand. Okay, its budget, maybe before it was cut during this the last budget cut, we started the year with a reduced budget. The financial year, that's 2020-2021, with a reduced budget. Why? It's because the department was not spending the money. All right, and there was already a history of under expenditure in the department. The department returning the money back to Treasury. Then Treasury decided to reduce the budget. That is at the beginning of the financial year. And then when they see that the department was again not spending them, even the reduced budget, they cut it by another 100 million rand plus. And that today we have less than 500 million rand budget. It's because the department was already destined to surrender the money back to Treasury. And we should be at 75% of the expenditure, if my memory serves me well. But we are still at under 50% of the expenditure, you know. And again, is an indication of underperformance in the department. It's fine. I'm happy that the matter is receiving attention. We hope that those processes will yield the results that you would see the department starting to address the issues that it was created to address, and the employees were employed to perform. All right, so I'm happy that the DM is in the meeting, but I will call him whenever he wishes to come in and speak. But for now, let me ask the officials to talk to the issues that have been raised. Maybe the DM would want to come in at the end of this discussion before we take the presentation on the next item. Miss Mafu.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to confirm that our footprint in provinces is in all provinces excluding Limpopo, KZN and Gauteng. So we do have offices in all other provinces. The second issue that I want to talk to is the issue of the PPE. Honorable members, the department has actually provided PPEs in all provincial offices. And the decontamination in terms of fumigation has happened periodically. Even this year when we opened after Christmas, a service provider which works with government has done that on our behalf, and we don't pay a cent towards that. But if you were to go to all provinces, you will find the sanitizers and everything that you get in the national department, including gloves, a mask, and everything. We did procure for them. But what I want to also indicate, honorable members, is that in terms of when officials are not responsive at a unit level, and I'll make an example with education support. When military veterans are not getting joy from that unit, they then escalate to the DG. And I know the DG, through his office and through other officials, I get a fair share of that. We get us to go and assist and to go and facilitate so that there could be relief in terms of the complaints by the military veterans. And I would want to talk to whether there is a dedicated officials for stakeholder management or stakeholder relations, and say the main person for that is the DG. And I'll just make an example with human settlements. There is a forum where DGs sit with senior officials and deal with issues. And there are periodicals, I think it's monthly, meetings where all coordinators from provinces come together with the national department so that they can then look at issues that might be coming from each province, and they address those. So there are mechanisms in terms of dealing with issues. And I know for health, there is a forum where officials from DMV and officials from SEMS sit together in a steering committee and look at the challenges. But I think, honorable members, the issue of bringing different departments under the same roof and to look at the challenges might actually assist in terms of breaking through so that there can be improvement, in particular with invoicing, in particular with invoices. Because if invoices are not there, the department will not be able to pay. I will then, Honorable Chair, if you allow me, invite Mr. Mafanya, no sorry, Mr. Musi, to talk on issues that relate to his area, and ask CFO to talk to issues that relate to finances, and then I will ask, actually I think it's only those two that should be making contributions. Over to you, Mr. Musi.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, colleagues. I'm sorry that I was cut off. I just reconnected now. I might have missed the inputs from the members, including the chair or the committee. I just tried to make a call after reconnecting, after struggling a bit. I'm told that there was an issue around the SRD, and the concern perhaps the lack of sense of urgency around that issue, which I will reflect on as at the time of December. And then I would really appreciate acting DDG to maybe advise on what the key issues are outside of this one that I need to reflect on, and then I'll make further comments.
Mr. Musi, if you can refer to the mechanisms that you have in dealing with human resource, human settlement issues, and if you can lift particular challenges that you have in that space. And if you can touch of education support, please. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much. Apologies for inconvenience in the meeting. I'll quickly deal with the issue of SRD. Just to remind members that it may not necessarily be the issue of lack of sense of urgency in dealing with SRD. As members would have recalled that this is not necessarily a benefit stipulated in Section 5 of the Act. It's an intervention meant to deal through ministerial directive with the matters that pertain to the most destitute and poor military veterans. And this program was being migrated to social development because that's where the competency of social relief of distress lies in terms of legal legislative mandate. So when COVID-19 hit us, we were in the process of handing over this program so that it can be managed within established mechanisms within social development. However, with the wisdom of the Council on Defence, we advise that now, in light of COVID-19, we may have to revisit how we can support further military veterans who would have been found wanting under the circumstances of COVID-19. And in May, it was therefore resuscitated, and we stalled the issue of handing it over to social development. And in the process of revisiting it, it was then agreed that we will top up on the 350 being provided for all poor South Africans, and then top up with 850, which then became 1,200. It was then in that context delivered in partnership with SASA and social development. And when we started putting systems in place, we started mainly around July to be able to have a process where people are vetted through SASA. When they come to us having qualified, we then top up. And as indicated, the system are manual, and they do actually get affected. And secondly, there is no inherent capacity in the department in terms of personnel to effectively deal with this matter. However, notwithstanding that, we have been able to make steady progress, trying to the best of our ability within limited resources and the system challenges to fast track the issue. I must indicate that with the establishment of the presidential task team and subsequently the volunteering of military veterans who then wanted to assist the department given the limitations of capacity, the program has been ramped up in a big way. When we started with spending slow, as we speak now, we've just crossed 5 million rands of what was allocated to us, of 11 million rands. And we are supporting no less than 500 people at this stage. Of course, their numbers are increasing as we move along. And we think that we are on course now to address the issue of 27% spend at the time of December. Third and fourth quarter are indicating that we've actually significantly grown. And maybe the CFO can assist on how far we are in terms of the increased expenditure and the maturity of the system to manage it better. The second part then, honorable members and chair, is the issue relating to human settlement. As Mr. Sowengo in his opening remarks had indicated that in presentation that we normally deliver this program in partnership with the Department of Human Settlement. They normally build houses and we top up. And it's becoming clearer that that dependency has to be improved in order to fast track delivery. I can confirm now that the relationship now has improved significantly with Human Settlement, and the program has gained traction, especially in the last 2 years, but if more specifically, as recently, especially in areas like Gauteng and the Western Cape. The program is delivering much faster, even meeting targets. We now have put in place quarterly meetings to monitor effectively as to where we are. As we speak now, we have been able to actually, within even this financial year, to deliver on target in terms of the set targets. The only thing that will be slow is in terms of what was indicated. We need heavy letters, we need invoices to be brought on time, and that has been relatively slow, but we are finding a solution to it moving forward. As we speak now, just in the space of the last month, we were able to get, just an illustration, 10.5 million payments through invoices with Gauteng. We have 9.5 million rands with Limpopo, that is already on payment. So it is significantly beginning to change in the right direction. However, we still have challenges, especially in areas like KwaZulu-Natal, and the special interventions are being made through the Minister of Human Settlement to deal with the slowest pace of delivery, which is in KwaZulu-Natal. The steering committee is in place. So we are beginning to tackle the areas where there was slow development. However, there are still challenges, and it's ongoing to improve. And one of the critical elements to improve is to ensure that we have strong monitoring and evaluation system, fast track payment mechanisms, as well as ensure that we put pressure on developers to be able to fast track delivery in line with our targets. The last part on education support, the issue has also been stated that our system is manual, And during COVID, our contact and communication has not been easy with military veterans. However, with the relaxed restrictions, we're beginning to make a great improvement. We have been reinforced by detached members of defense, who are helping us a great deal insofar as making the challenges of incapacity to be addressed. As we speak now, we have had a moratorium on taking new applications. That moratorium has been uplifted through the advice and the guidance of the presidential task team. As we speak now, we are processing not less than 1,300 applications. In fact, I'm told that it has gone a bit higher. I will confirm those steps because every day we are getting applications. So from where we sit, while there are challenges, we think that improvements are taking place, but what is critical and becoming clearer is that we need to strengthen and tighten intergovernmental relations framework to be able to deliver much more effectively. I think that I'll end at this point with that note, Chair. I'll take further questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Mosi. CFO, Central Group.
Thank you, Chair. Good day, honorable members. Good day, honorable Deputy Minister. Chair, Mr. Mose has touched on probably the most problematic issues. And what I would like to add as of this morning, Chair and members, I can confirm that there is now a chance that we can also get another claim from Gauteng, a human settlement, in relation to housing with a value of just above 20 million. These are the long outstanding claims where then in our annual financial statement for the past at least two financial years, we've been carrying huge amounts of accruals. Even if you look at our status of financial position in the annual financial statement, AG has kept raised concerns due to these higher liabilities that the department carry. So I can confirm that then it appears that we are now winning with Gauteng human settlement because the majority of the accrual was there. This is mainly due to assistance through the political hit. We appreciate that. In terms of health care, it is a norm that around quarter 3, then quarter 4, we see a peak in the expenditure in terms of health. And the same applies with education support check. Around the same period, we normally see a peak in terms of expenditure. So probably in terms of the expenditure against key benefits, I must also say, Chair, that the key benefits, they are about 55-56% of our total allocated budget, of which then there is a 20% allocation for COE and the balance is on operating expenditure. So it is always then an effort on our side to ensure that we expend that money on key benefits. So with this improvement that we are seeing now in quarter four, Chair, not that we will spend the budget fully, but we will then see spend on benefit, which then gives hope to military veterans. And one other point I wanted to just stress out, Chair, not in disagreement with yourself on the statement you made on the budget cuts. I would like to just confirm that we received 3 cuts. The first cut was the 137 million, which was a government-wide salary reduction due to COVID stimulus package. Then there was a second cut for DMV, it was around 54 million. And that was cutting across other government departments as well, they were contributing. That was in relation to the FAA business rescue. Then there was the last cut of about 11.5 million. That 11.5 million was on COE. That was then the attempt of the government to reduce the burden on the cost of employment. So those cuts were applicable to all other government departments, Chair, if I may just stress that one out. So in terms of financial performance, Chair, we submit that we've been battling as a department in terms of expanding. But however, with the improvement that we see now on key benefits, we will then, on quarter four reporting, then demonstrate how far we have gone in terms of recovery plans. That's all I wanted to just add on, Chair, without repeating what the other colleagues have said. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, colleagues. I think that takes us to the end of this item. DM, would you want to make a comment at this stage?
Chairperson, thank you very much, and to honorable members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to make a few observations in relation to the report that has just been shared with the committee. I am making my comments, Chair and honorable members, aware that this is your meeting with the department to help keep an eye on the execution of plans and budgets. Parliament has agreed with the department to be executed in this financial year. So I am making my comments not to come in between your engagement with the department, because the department has the responsibility to account for the monies that you gave them. They have the responsibility to implement the plans they shared with you, and of course optimistically believe that they will be able to execute. My sentiment is that the third quarter report of the department, as I think inputters in the discussion have observed, is obviously a concern, because by the end of the third quarter, by the end of December, in any department in government, if spending is not at 75%, you can already anticipate the underspending of the department, because there isn't much time after December between that January to March activity generally in the economy, such that you can have consumption escalated. The last quarter four of the year, is always a quarter that is a bit sluggish as far as getting activities driven rigorously. So at the end of quarter three, if the department was below half of the budget that it was given, of course, it means we have a disaster. It is a disastrous situation. And I have hinted this much earlier, that the management of the department needed to keep its eye on the ball, because as reductions were effected on the budget of the department as a result of COVID and other subsequent reductions to contribute to, you know, money that had to go to FAA. I make the point that, you know, the concerns of management and the wailing of people that money was being taken away may actually not be, you know, a fair assessment of what those decisions were going, how they were going to impact on our department, because we have a record of underspending anyway. And the issues, as the members are saying, they are in big, they are structural bottlenecks. They are systemic bottlenecks. This department will never spend the way its leadership, management wants to see things happen to everybody's satisfaction. It will never spend to everybody's satisfaction for as long as we do not have adequate human resource to execute the mandate. You see, there is mention of provincial departments, I mean offices of the department in the provinces in our discussion. But I know that there's a lot of optimism around that. The infrastructure of the department in the provinces is almost none. It's not there. Because you see, if we had provincial departments, there wouldn't be this stress within this community of access to services that the department must provide. Part of the reason why there is, you know, depression within the community about accessing the services from the department is because they can't reach the department. Those provincial offices, they don't exist. I've been to some of the provinces where, in the book, the report is that we have offices. And I know that there are no offices there. There are people who are receiving salaries, but there is no workstation where military veterans know they can go to if they have problems in those provinces. So what I'm saying, we've got structural problems. The department is a very limited organization, but the other area, as I'm saying, there are also systemic problems. It's that the policy operating standard procedures are not always sufficient and in place to get things to happen. They are just not there. So it doesn't matter, you can have the money, but you won't be able to spend because of this real objective limitations that the department has. So my point is that the third quarter report is an indication that to the end of the year, which is now 2 weeks from now, to the end of the year, we should not expect much improvement to the picture we are dealing with now in relation to the department. And I know so because the presidential task team that has been referred to has been under pressure to respond to grievances that were raised in November last year by military veterans who went on a march and sought that presidential party sought to get things to happen immediately in the areas where they were complained. And when we turned to the department to get the capacity to respond to those areas, there was just there was a void there. You can see that even in the department, there isn't the capacity to do much. There isn't a capacity to do much. So the relief that in the ministry we are hoping will come about is the intervention to get provinces to come in to help deliver those benefits of military veterans that are provincial competence are core competencies of province and nation. To have the provincial departments, line function departments, to assist the Department of Military Veterans to deliver some of the services with, of course, the assistance in terms of leadership and direction of our premiers. That is what will, in my view, bring about the spending of budgets that we are talking about, because you'll be opening the system. You'll have a bigger bureaucracy to deal, to respond to the demand. But right now, the situation is that the department is very constrained. And what even exacerbates that problem is that at the senior management level, there are vacancies there, there are posts that are very critical at the DDG level, director level, that are not filled. And without those role players in the organization present, there isn't much that we can do. There isn't really much that we can do. That is why the development now that all of those posts are now being advertised, it's a movement in the right direction. It's a movement in the right direction. We need to increase the capacity of the department structurally, but we also need to improve, to improve its capacity systemically. We will then see an improvement in the delivery of this service. I don't want to go into the details because I've looked at the report of the different areas where the department has reported underperformance. And when you look at the reasons why, in some areas, of course, you can see that there's a lack of courage to admit and to place the problem where it actually, originates from or emanates from. Some of the, reasons that the management is giving, not very helpful, not very helpful, because there are other benefits that could have been rolled out even more because of COVID. It's not everything that has been affected by COVID. This department is about benefits. It's about welfare. It's about, assisting people with a whole lot of needs. So COVID does not necessarily in all areas of the department equals to low or below target performance. No, actually there are areas where COVID could have meant overdrive, because the welfare needs of this community would have increased as a result of COVID. So that is my take, Chair, that it's going to be a long haul to turn the corner. The right things, I believe, are happening. The advertised posts in the senior, echelons of the department are going to bring about an improvement. The bringing in of the provinces through the premiers are going to, is going to also bring about an improvement in the performance of the department. That's what I can say. Otherwise, the comments were noted of what members are saying of this quarter three report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM. I think you hit the head on the nail. It's good that you said the things that you have said, opening up to the committee. In the presence of the departmental team, so that they are aware of the challenges that the department is actually facing. I know some of the senior managers in the department are new, and they might not have been exposed to some of the issues that the DM, the deputy minister, is raising. In actual fact, the DM is echoing
the sentiments or the concerns that we have expressed in this committee. MAFU is aware of them, the CFO is aware of them, and the Acting Director General is also aware of them. And of course, the new senior managers, they may actually be hearing some of these things for the first time. So, guys, colleagues, these are matters and we are extremely concerned. Please attend to them. CFO and MAFU, may I make this request to you that I know that you reconcile your monthly financial statements by the 15th or 20th of the following month. Is that true?
Can you confirm?
Yes, correct, Chair, through the submission of the IYM to National Treasury. Yes, thanks.
By which date? Just confirm the date.
By the 15th of each month.
By the 15th of each month. Can we get the unaudited budget by the 20th of April?
Noted, Chief. It will be submitted. Thank you.
It will be submitted. So, Brian, please prepare a letter under my signature to the department with the request for the in-year monitoring information, budget information for the whole year. We know it's unaudited by the 20th of April. Brian, are we still together? Brian?
I'm sorry, Chair, yes, sir.
You heard my request?
I'm sorry, Chair, my network is not good.
Yeah, the department will be ready with the financial statement, the financial statement for 2021, but the information will not be audited. It's unaudited financial report for 2021 by the 20th of April this year. So I'm saying, please prepare a letter with that request and direct it to the acting to the department, requesting, that is, requesting the information that we need.
All right, it's noted.
Okay. So in other words, it is the, let me say, is the budget information, budget performance information for 20, budget performance information for 2021, and unaudited, we understand, but we need it by the 20th of April next year, or this 20th of April. All right.
Yes.
So MAFU, are we together on that one?
100%, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. All right, I think that takes us to the end of this item. I think we will leave it at that, and thanks to the DM for the comments. Can we then quickly go through the what you call the database? Just do a presentation, there will be questions, you respond, and then I'll ask the DM at the end to conclude the discussion on that item. Ms. MAFU?
Thank you, Chair. The presentation will be done by Mr. Matsafu. Over to you, Mr. Matsafu.
Okay. Good day, good morning, Honorable Chair, good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members and colleagues. Members, I'm not sure if I have to share from my side. Is there somebody driving the slides?
Yes, I understood that you requested us to do that. Brian, was that not the request, that you do it from your side?
No, Chair, it was not, but I can do it from my part, or if he's able to, he can share from his part. I have given them the necessary...
Okay. So you have been enabled to flight it so that you take full control of the slides and the rollout.
Chairperson, I'm not sure if everybody can see the presentation.
I can see it very well. Can you eliminate the preview slides on the left so that you remain with one slide on the screen? Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've done so. Is that visible? Is okay?
It is, sir.
All right. Well, I'll try to control it because I was using that previous slide to help me. But then here's the presentation outline. About 12 items are appearing there, but the last item, the consolidated list from the Liberation Struggle War Veterans, we've removed from this presentation as it didn't prove to be relevant for what we wanted to present to the portfolio committee. So that part will not be there. Now, there is that purpose, there's number 2 and 3 are just to give the same thing, it's just a continuation of 3, but we just felt that we must just separate them because at least the context will be understood correctly, as well as number 4 and 5. And then number 6 talk to the stats on Azanla, because Azanla stats was not on the CPR list, because we used some information from there. And then, okay, number 7 talks to the summary, the overall statistics. The file that we've read it for verification. The issues that talks to what we think will be a credible and secure database. And then also the slide on the development of the database management solution for DOD. Okay, the purpose of this presentation is to brief the portfolio committee on defense and military veterans on legal cleansing and processes with regards to national military veterans database. Okay, we are trying on this slide to just provide information quickly on what is that we refer to as data cleansing. We are saying that data cleansing with reference to us is the process of us trying to fix and remove incorrect, corrupted, and incorrectly formatted duplicate or incomplete data from our data set, which is the database. And then our aim is to have our data quality assured in order to help us answer a few questions that goes with data, whether that data makes sense, whether it follows appropriate rules, and whether it proves or disproves our working theory of providing dignified, unified, empowered, and self-sufficient military veterans community, or bring any insight to life. Now, we are in short saying that there are some qualities characteristics that cleansing must have, things that talks to the validity, to the accuracy, to completeness, to consistency, and to uniformity of data. Therefore, we have now the context in which we have to clean data or database with it relates to DLB. One is that one must say that the whole issues around the concerns around the database or the challenges around the database are all around the data that is in our database, which results in a number of questions that are being raised with regard to the authenticity of the data, the credibility, the acceptability and the security of the data. Therefore, DMV has to determine if the data in its possession complies with its own rule books. We are just using that just to demonstrate to say the Minister of Veterans Act can be taken as one rule book, our regulations can be taken as one, and then there will be other rule books that might be external to DMV, such as the DHA population register, which will help to determine if the ID numbers in our database are authentic. So we will also have to check with the Minister of Veterans Association if there are any rule books from their side, which will ask you to check if the data in the database can be accepted as authentic and credible. And therefore, in the context of DMV, there have been some concerns which triggered the need to clean the database. And then I want honorable members to be to note that it doesn't mean that all those factors listed below have been proven to be correct, but I think those concerns are registered so that they can assist the process. One is there is a concern that some applicants are registered on the database and are suspected to be non-military veterans. Therefore, if we are to apply our rule books, will determine exactly who should be a military veteran, who should not be a military veteran. Therefore, the data cleaning process will be assisted. The other one is that the dependence of this NSF military veterans who are registered as the main members as a result of the demobilization process. That talks to the note at the bottom of that slide, which says that that information was taken as reported in the Department of Defense Final Integration Report to the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, and that dates back to 2003. So we just didn't want to leave that because we'll have to investigate if there is such cases, and if there are, they need to be cleaned and we need to report such cases. And then also the issue about the reserve forces members registered on the military veterans database. Obviously, we'll be working closely with our legal services and others who can then interpret the Defense Act and the DMV Act so that we can then check if the reserve force members should not or should be registered on the database. And then we also have to check and confirm the relationships of dependents to main members in the database. There we'll have to beef up a few areas, the standard operation procedure, and also be guided by the Act whether dependents will be registered on their own in the case the main members have been deceased or what. So we have to
Sorry for disruption, Mr. Mayor. The DM is withdrawing from 12 o'clock due to another pressing engagement. Yes. Thank you very much, DM, for your participation today.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to committee members, thank you very much. I will catch up with the rest of the deliberations when I return with my officials. Thank you.
So much. Thank you so much, dear. Bye-bye. Over to my apologies.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And also, there are issues of uncategorized data where we'll find cases of unknowns, which we'll have to clear as we clean the database. And also, as you'll see in the slides of the stats, there are unupdated contact details in the database which will need to be updated. And then also, there's an issue about the confirmation of the signature specimen for service certificates that are on the database. Obviously, we will be handling that
issue in, together with the associations, because we are going to at some stage require the signature specimen. And also there's also issues around incorrect and valid ID numbers that are captured on the database. Therefore, the cleansing will have to then deal with all these issues. Okay, this next slide is the slide that talks to numbers, but I'll concentrate only on the last column. This specifically speaks to MK and APLA. And then there are nodes there, node 1 and 2, which I'll talk to. One is that we have gone to the CPR, the personnel register, the certified personnel register, to check and confirm the numbers that were there at the beginning, so that we can then start to talk to the database from the time the CPR was formed up to date. Therefore, we note that the records on NSF CPR who integrated in the SANDF were 21,212. And then record, the CPR also shows that there are members who demobilized at that time, which is 9,847. And then the number of members who integrated and demobilized combined is 31,059. And then we also took that data to try and check the first numbers that match our the register, the database, and then we found that we could match 17,036. And then we also found deceased members on the database about 6523 and alive on the database 10513. This is all NSF. And then we also have members that are still serving on SANDF, which is 8025. This is in line with note number 2, which we received from the HR, SANDF HR. And then we've got the last note there about members not yet registered. We still have to confirm whether, in fact, what happened to those members. So let me just put it that way, because the studies, we have to then run through them and then understand exactly what the 2488 meant. Okay, and then also we went on to check if there are any members that match the CPR but are not registered on the database. We got that 2042. We compared those members with the first numbers against the CPR to obtain the information that we could, that's note number 1 there. And then also, this slide is just summarizes the two slides that we talked about, the numbers that do not match the CPR the numbers that match the CPR and the report on the database. Okay, we then went on to try and check the stats on the last week. That's what we have there, about 580 members alive on our database. And then we then decided to also check, because the cleansing of the database will not only talk to the NSF members, will talk to the overall stats on the database, so that if the numbers as we go forward do change, then we can account for the changes. So it is important that we then provide the overall statistics in terms of what is there in the database. I'm not going to try to go column by column, line for line with the numbers, but what I wanted to emphasize is just to the last three columns at the back. The first one is addresses outside RSA. We found out that there are members with addresses that are not South African addresses, but they are on the database. But then, as we discussed this, I think some members might have migrated from the country, and the total is 191. And then also, we have members that have not, like I said in one of the slides, that have not updated their addresses, and that number is 4,804. We will then check if, as the verification process goes, or as we get other records from our dispensing side, we can be able to update those, or we'll have to do something with it, whether a communique is sent for members to update the things, we'll see how to approach it, but there is a need for us to do that so that the addresses are updated on the database. And then we also provided the overall statistics on the deceased members, but what we want to say that is that there are those addresses, last known addresses outside South Africa, and what we are not sure is whether those members were buried there or what. That is the information that we will have to find out as we build the data in the database. And then we also have the addresses still to be confirmed. But here, I must say that as the burial support grant has been dispensed, it is important that we get, we check these numbers against the burial support grant that has been made so that we can then update the last known as the addresses of those deceased, because those who claim will be having addresses where they are staying or where the claim has been, and that will assist us to update the database and increase the cleanliness of the data. And then the next slide, we would like to just quickly talk to the pending verification process. And then I must invite members to take note of the two bullet points down there. These are the numbers, but then we are experiencing a situation where on a daily basis we are receiving applications which are not necessarily included in this number, and then we have put those applications aside so that we can then decide correctly whether to include it here for all of them to go into verification, and what sort of applications those are. And then with regard to the update in terms of the verification process, it is important at this stage to say that the process has since moved to ministry, and it will be conducted from there. But the update that we have is that the process itself has not started, but there has been movement in terms of the finalization of the terms of reference of the verification panel, in terms of briefing the association, and in terms of the responsibility of studying the observers. So that is the progress on this. And we think that once this process is concluded, then it will then also start to impact other areas where we are receiving complaints, where people go to the appeals court, people go to the public protector, and all those institutions complaining about them not being registered on the database. And we think that this will also contribute immensely to the cleansing of the data in the database once this process has been dealt with. And then this next slide is just a slide that tries to talk to what we envisage to be a secure and credible database. One is that the minute the signature specimen has been confirmed, and the responsible people who must sign the certificate or whatever document has been identified, it will help us to make sure that no unauthorized entry in the database happens if the signature specimens do not confirm the authority that is given to the signatory of whatever document. And also we are envisaging a situation where there's a need to immediately implement the biometrics so that access to the database becomes completely under control, and there's an audit trail where we can trace everything that is happening in the database. We've already started, in fact, we concluded the segregation of duties and user rights so that people cannot just enter into the database and do what I'm not allowed to do. Therefore, that is done. And then also like to put the robust database software and hardware in place. I think this is soliciting attention. And then that will also help us to have a secure database backup solution. And then with regard to the development of the solution itself, we have resuscitated the process that had already started with CETA. And then the consultations are going through as we speak. We are busy with them confirming the business requirements that the department has so that they can have an automated solution, so that if there's any changes in regulations, we can update that. And then we also put the project structure in place, the ICTs, in fact, the project steering committee, and the governing document like the charter completed, and therefore the governance of the project will improve the bit so that we can then achieve our date of November 21, because by that date we envisage a situation where there would be the substantial development of the modules, because there are not many, but then I think we'll report at that time to say what the status is. And then we will also not be paying for the usage of this development, the development of this solution, as CETA will be doing that. But then the DMV will only start to pay for the usage of the solution when the solution is ready to be used. So I think that concludes the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Machafu. Ms. Mafu?
Yes.
Any concluding remark from yourself?
Thank you, Chairperson. With the issue of database, I think, Chairperson, the sorting out of the actual database is critical for the work DMV is doing, but it is also critical for us to know that we are giving benefits to deserving military veterans and their dependents, and that we read the system with people who are not supposed to be part of the database. But I do want to indicate, Chairperson, that the presidential task team has also given us support in this regard, and with their intervention, I am very confident that we will soon be having a clean database, and that the challenges around that might be things of the past. But what is important also, Chairperson, is the fact that CETA, in terms of ICT requirements of government, is the only service provider or any, is the only agency that can assist us. And maybe the committee might be interested to actually engage CETA so that they can also commit in terms of the dates that they've given us. And I'm saying that because from experience, we've been shifting the dates where we thought would be fully automated. So I think in that regard, we need assistance. But it is promising, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Marfo. I think it's your full control of the process now. I can hear it even from the command of your presentation, and I think it gives us hope. You're not yet there, but it gives us hope that you are getting there. I mean, the way you have presented the statistics, you have shown you've looked at the issue from all angles to create a picture that will give confidence whoever is looking at the statistics.
All right, let me just recognize, looking at the system, On my right, check who has raised his hand. I can see one hand so far. Any other? And any other? Tabu Mutu, raise your hand up. Not yet up. All right. I know Mafanya is still trying, fiddling with his system.
I'm covered, man. I'm covered.
Okay, so I only have one hand. No, thank you so much, colleagues. Over to Ms. Genevieve.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. With regard to, I mean, to the database, I just want to know the issue of the online applications, because some of the military veterans may have a challenge when it comes to the online application because of the facilities on their side to use, like email address. They may use maybe a sort of the internet cafe to email or to do the online, but for the department to respond to them, to me it seems there might be a challenge in the case where the addresses are not clear, or some information like the ID, maybe there's a shortage of a number. I'm checking with the department whether there are any other options when it comes to provinces where they can be able, to do the applications manually and submit to offices to ensure that their application whatsoever is able to get through to the department.
I will be happy with that, and also for the department to make sure that military veterans or people are made aware of what to do, how to apply. Are they using sort of maybe advertising on papers or something, so that at least the information is quickly spread to all those people who may have not be able to get information when it comes to the issue of online or something? I think you're Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not a question, it's just to put it on record, Chair, that I agree that we must engage with CETA, but that we also must engage with the Presidential Task Team to bring us on par as soon as they are ahead of some of the issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. It's fine. We'll try to fit that in, Ms. Burgess. Thank you very much for following up on that. All right, colleagues, that then takes care of these items. One, we have concluded the budget, second quarter, and the third quarter budget performance report. But we made a request that the department give us, that they give us the closeout report, 2021 closeout report, which they've undertaken to do by the 20th of April. And we know that it's unaudited, but we would need it when we consider their budget for 21-2022. It would be a useful background information. And then on this one, we conclude that when they are ready, but the DM would advise us, we then invite those responsible who are leading certain streams to come and talk to us on how far they are in addressing some of the matters that have been identified. And there's an issue of CETA as well. CETA has been coming up many times in the presentation. So we must call them, and because they appear crucial to ensuring that even when this has been this database clearing has been finalized, to ensure that it's foolproof and it is protected. No one can interfere with it. Ms. Mafu, I subsequently had a conversation with one colleague who says to me, man, in the police, it's not very easy to interfere with the record. Like for instance, the air system will tell you who entered an entry on the record, what time and what exactly he or she did, and the department. I'm asking this because there is from your presentation you seem to suggest that when you have people who are on the system, when in actual fact they're not supposed to be in the system, but you can't say exactly how they got there and who put them there, when they were put there, and you are aware of the system that the police are using.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are aware. It is actually what make us talk CETA, because ordinarily we should have a secured environment.
Okay. No, I'm happy that you of the system that the police are using. It's foolproof, operates the record. I'm sure you might have some biometric, things that would leave a trail behind, so that no one is able to populate the information that no one else would know who did it. All right. Now let's leave it at that for now. We'll interact with CETA and we'll ask such questions when we meet with them. All right. I think that takes care of this. There is now just last item. I think it's under you as well, but because you it's the presentation or by the what do you call this, by the appeals board. May I invite you said who was going to take us through that presentation? Is the military appeal board?
Yes, there are two people. The Murad Law is here and Shamim.
Oh, yes. The two board members, eh?
No, it's only one.
It's only one. All right.
Yeah, can
we hear me? Yes, I can hear you. Please, you may.
I'm
yes,
sir. Yeah, I'm the only one, and should have stated, the apologies for the other members.
Okay, that's right.
And Attorney Fabio Hasenberg is medically put off.
Okay. That is Cyril Morolo. Over to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Honorable Chair. Good day, members of the Parliament, members of the Department. I'm going to present on behalf of the Chair, the Appeals Board, you know, progress report. Very bad, you know, because most previously. On the introduction, you know, Honorable Chair, look at that military veterans are not a homogeneous group. Within the groupings of military veterans, there are those that are literate and are well-to-do. Others are illiterate and destitute. In terms of their background, they come from rural, semi-rural, and others from urban areas. The common thread in all the above groupings is the fact that they are survivors of most harsh and dangerous situations, where they participated to rid the country of the inhuman system of apartheid, and also to usher in our constitutional democracy, which every one of us is currently enjoying. Having acknowledged the already existing distress within the military veterans, the added burden resulting from the COVID-19 has resulted in increased frustration made event evident through the increased queries addressed to the Appeals Board office. Remote working by the department, you know, officials has also incited further mistrust from the military veterans towards the department. Veterans are now increasingly reaching out to the AD at the slightest suspicion of inefficiency. In this case, some of them, of course, have been redirected to the department through socioeconomic support unit. However, I think I must just elaborate a bit there, you know, about this matter, where now the appeals board finds itself. Because some of the matters, of course, are directed to the appeals board. And now it finds itself doing administrative work of the department. Because now in instances where the department, you know, fails to make a decision, which of course, in terms of budget, it is a failure to make a decision is a decision. When of course there was an unreasonable delay in executing that, you know, mandate to take a decision. And secondly, in terms of the department's regulations, Rule 21 Subrule 1 also provides that within 30 days after the applicant has made an application to the department, they must be informed in writing about the outcome of their application. This is not that. And what happens now? You find that some are years, months, it's not just, you know, a delay which a person Act of the Act of Court. They are prohibited because you can only take decisions on matters which have been decided by the department. So in this instance, at a previous hearing, we don't make orders. We make interim orders. Where now we they must have made a decision. Then from then, ever that decision is not made, then the matter will come before the appeal court hearing. These are issues which need to be cleared, you know, so that, you know, in fact, we must work on the department, you know, you know, unnecessarily. This is exactly what Minister echoed. I just wanted to highlight this. Why, on the slightest suspicion, the military veterans now fight the appeal board. And on the other hand, the AD depends on the COP-MV to dispel the funds that are needed by the AD to carry out its mandate. The complex AD being the arbiter on behalf of the military veterans, who is the GMV being the approver of the budget of the AD. Such a relationship needs to be handled with sensitivity, with one goal in mind, to justify effectively implementation of Section 5 of the Military Veterans Act. So I think this one, you know, of the budget will deal with it later, but just to highlight that conflict of interest, that it is there, it's apparent, and it cannot be wished away. No matter, you know, who says what, as long as that relationship is like that, it will remain in the conflict of interest, whether we like it or not. So, but we'll come to that when we address the budget. So now, on the next one, it's only a Tilbot strategic emphasis. Even during this testing times of COVID-19, the Tilbot aims to ensure that delivery military veterans gain access of the benefits in terms of Section 5 of the Act, to ensuring that majority and not only a section of military veterans use the services of the appeal board, or are at least aware of its existence. And on this one, you know, we don't even have that budget which we have cried for so many years, you know, of making, you know, you will see as we read the other key priorities are to continue attending to large cases even during this COVID-19 period to expand the state on large appeals. For the since October, new cases, 7 to December 27, cases awaiting hearing, 30 cases, head pre cases, head 0 successful cases to be determined, dismissed cases, 2 new applications received and September 17, 2 cases, 3 cases awaiting hearing, 42 cases awaiting pre-hearing, 0. And then now, I think this was the request from the portfolio committees on the last session we were here, where now, you know, they requested the demographics, lost appeals and demographics. The appeal board office open, of course, to all the military veterans from both statutory and non-statutory forces nationally. Reporting on the demographics of the military veterans that approach this office is therefore discouraged, as it may promote the sentiment of biasness towards them and their plight. For purposes of responding to a query raised in the last portfolio committee meeting, the stats are as follows. Cases, okay, from October to December, race, colored, 3, African, 24, white, 0, Indian, 0. Province, Gauteng Province, 09, Northwest, 01, Northern Cape, 5, Western Cape, 5, Eastern Cape, 3, Limpopo, 3, Mpumalanga, 0, Free State, 0, KZN, 1. These are all non-statutory forces. On the lodged appeals, it's a governing side. Are you still there, Honorable Chair? Hello?
Yes, we are listening, sir.
Sure, yeah, I was not quite sure because my mic is also on mute. Lodged appeals, trends. Education, queries for support of above 20,000 for basic is slowly fading away. Yeah, we had a challenge here on this, 20,000, threshold, because the budget, the allocation, previous allocation was 42,500. So this
them.
Mm-hmm.
Credit for support for private schools, school scholars are also on an upward right. This is I've not yet got to know why the department, you know, it's not, we have not yet, you know, established that. I think we have not also yet, you know, made a decision in that part. But yeah, I think this one we need to find out the fact why the logic must be there, you know, and the reasons why, because now in section of the act, and then not for non-payment of fees, written by 2018-2000 still exists as a result. Of course, I rejected from attending school, sitting at home, idling. So this one, we cannot do anything as now. We are focused on FIQ, you know, we have. And whether you know that implementation of the appeal board decision, we cannot enforce the appellants. We always approach, you know, go to court. It is taken by the department against the appellants. Where now you find that the appeal board has made a decision and based a commitment letter issued by the department to pay for that month, for that year. And the department reneges from that kind of an agreement. And the department has in the past provided education, so request the High Court to reconsider the decision taken by the appeals board. Of course, this failed to attend to the appeals board proceedings. And now, in contravention of the agreement into between the appeals board, where all the members of the appeals board are present, and the acting director general, and all the senior managers of the department, that was held on the 18th of September, whereby, you know, the issue of the default judgment taken by the appeals board was addressed thoroughly, and that the appeals board should amend its, you know, appeals board rules and regulations to incorporate a provision for rescission of judgment. Because now, what will happen in any event is even if they go to the High Court, the High Court cannot review a default judgment. The High Court will still refer that matter to the appeals board. Because these are trivial matters, which of course the High Court cannot entertain. But it will say, okay, yeah, if it agrees, of course, with the department, let the matter be referred to the appeals board. So this meeting where we agreed upon about the application for rescission was precisely to save cost, taxpayers' money, so that, you know, money cannot just, you know, go there without any valid reason paid to the lawyers. And also the state attorney is not also handling that matter on his own. He will be briefing now an attorney from outside. You know, it reminds me of last month we attended the great trial in Bloemfontein via virtual. It was myself, Advocate Chibati, and Attorney Ferdi Altenberg.
So this matter was based on education, basic education, where the department reneged from the agreement, you know, to pay for three children, you know, minor children of the appellate. So now, you know, we have gone through, the appeal was gone through all the, you know, documents. It was a huge, you know, application, gone through it. Then, you know, at the pre-trial, I raised this problem. I said, no, but you know, when I went through all this, I only found out that all what the department seeks the High Court to do, it is, you know, court to require the appellant to bring those documents to pay. I said, why can't the department communicate with the appellant directly and say that they must be able to pay you? And also, when they have done that in the past, so this is, in fact, Parliament should be aware of. And now this one on communication, of course, there is lack of communication, you know, between the military veterans and also the department. Yeah, I think I'll move on to the database. Yeah. The database, of course, you know, on the appeals on the database is also a problematic. From those appeals emanating from the verification panel, which was established by the department, where now, you know, before an applicant can be put on the database, he has to be verified whether he is a military veteran and he complies with the act which put the requirements, you know, stipulate the requirement clearly, you know, what needs to be done for a person to become, to be registered in the database of the department. So you found that this verification process was conducted 2013, 2014, you know, those years. And now the appellants are appealing now because those, you know, in terms of the constitution, and it is the right for the appellant to appeal, and also the panel sitting on those verification process, they inform the appellant that now we are declining, we are not going to put you on the database, and you have the right to appeal. So the appellant will appeal, and then we cause some of the department. And department, of course, you know, we require that, you know, they must provide us with the record of proceedings and the minutes to enable us to perform. Every appeal, if you can't just handle it, you know, without those records, of course, if there was a hearing, if there were proceedings conducted, we cannot get verification records from the department. And the director, you know, Honorable Mukwala also addressed the appeal board regarding this issue, not the verification, the record of proceedings. And now we made an interim, the appeals board made an interim order. And it was, you know, a comprehensive one so that they can understand the reasons why the appeals board, you know, is making this interim order. Yeah, it was so elaborate in terms of the rights of the appellant, in terms of the constitution, in terms of the uniform rules of, you know, the High Court, Rule 53, in terms of their own regulations, Regulation 21, in terms of the PAJA, you know, which requires that, you know, when that record is required, and the person must be given reasons, in terms of Section 83, Subsection 3 of the Constitution, must be given reasons. So now, if there is non-compliance, you know, regarding the issue of giving us, giving the accused about the records, then we go to PAJA to find solutions. What happens in that instance? Then PAJA states categorically that now, if they cannot provide those reasons, then, you know, the decisions was taken without good reason. So now we are now dealing with the database. Can we now, the appeals board, can it now take a decision like that in terms of PAJA? So now, these are some of the challenges. But this, of course, you know, we advise the department to write a letter, and so that, you know, and invite also the deputy minister who is now responsible for the department. And then let's find out what can be done. Of course, at the detriment and the prejudice of the appellate. So these are some of the cases which really need, of course, you know, the parliamentary intervention. Because what do we do? If we give those orders, the department obviously to go to the High Court. Of 1.8, almost 1.8 million, and the department is only willing to give us, give the appeals board as a million, 100,000. So now, these are, of course, those challenges which we have, you know, persistently, you know, articulated to the Parliament regarding this conflict of interest, that, you know, it will never happen, you know, that they will prioritize the appeals board. And also our independence, you know, because at times, you know, the department, you know, laboring under a wrong impression, of course, that, you know, the appeals board is under the department, which of course, entirely not true, because the appeal board is independent. It takes the decision, you know, independently. It is regulated by Section 90, you know. And also the
start to wind up so that you leave us to the report.
Yeah, no, in fact, yeah, I'm just finishing up, yeah. So, yeah, I was glad, of course, that, you know, the Honorable Chair, you know, did give us the minutes of the last, you know, session, whereby the organogram states clearly where the appeal was at. I think now it will be way forward, because members have received tools of trade, and I think most of the disputes will resolve them with the department and the TDF. I thank you, Lord, Honorable Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Morrow.
colleagues, are there any hands? tell me, are you involved, are you part of the process that the president, the deputy president is leading to address some of these challenges, Mr. Morogo?
No, no, I'm not part of that.
Are you aware of those discussions?
No, I'm not aware of those discussions.
Okay. All right. the deputy president brings together the deputy minister, the minister, the deputy minister, so, some officials.
I'm adding honorable chair. I am aware about that, the presidential capacity. But I thought you were saying the deputy minister. No.
The deputy president.
All the military veterans are aware, of course. Yeah, we are aware, about it.
No, it's fine. We are pinning our hopes on that process. We'll address almost all the issues that you have actually, that are a problem to the military veterans. Benefits, and because essentially what you have spoken about, one, database is also part of the of the process, and two, benefits where people are denied benefits that they rightly deserve, and so on and so forth. No, it's fine. Let's check off if there are any hands, Ms. Biggers.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to thank them for the presentation. But Chair, my first concern is about if we are looking at the appeal that was lodged in the different provinces, then we see that the cases in the smaller provinces are lesser than the bigger provinces. And I don't think, Chair, that it is because they don't have queries in those smaller provinces. But I think it's because they're not aware of, or they don't know how to lodge those appeals. So what I want to ask them, Chair, is to focus on their outreach programs to those provinces. Especially, for example, if they go to the Northern Cape, they will go, for example, to Kimberley. But they must go, they must focus on the region, like your JTG and your Pixlica Teme regions and your Namakwa regions. Chair, then my second question is, I have a concern, Chair, that the department is taking the appeal for to court. What will that be on the impact on the relationship, the impact on the relationship between the department and the board? Because if there is a disagreement, there must be mediation. But except for that mediation, what other efforts was there to resolve those issues? And then secondly, what is the impact of those litigations on both sides of the budget, on the appeals board and on the department? Then say lastly, children are rejecting from school because of non-payment. And I think, say, it's the issue of there's fighting between the elephants and then the grass is suffering. And it's unacceptable. Between the appeals board and the department, they must look to an interim solution while dealing with the problem. Because as government, we can't allow social decay that children must stay at home because of that. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks. Mafu, are you still in the meeting?
Yes, Chair, I am still in the meeting.
Yes, no, thank you so much. You see, I'm on exactly the point that Ms. Biggers is raising. Chapter 3 of the Constitution, there was a good reason why the drafters of the Constitution make a provision for this chapter, cooperative government. You know, this chapter creates intergovernmental structures and precisely to ensure that there's mutual trust and all levels of government act in good faith, and that they maintain that's all levels of government and organs of state, and that they maintain friendly relations, they assist and support one another, and they inform one another of, consult one another on matters of common concern, and that lastly, an organ of state. I'm looking at now section 41, subsection 3. An organ of state an organ of state involved in an intergovernmental dispute must make every effort, a reasonable effort, to settle the dispute by means of mechanism and procedures provided for that purpose, and must exhaust all other remedies before it approaches a court to resolve the dispute. And there is case law to support this assertion, where the court spelled out what exactly these provisions mean. I'm aware of KZN, government taking the national government to court, and they were told not to until they've resolved the intergovernmental mechanisms put in place to resolve the government. So taking the KZN government to court, or vice versa, or one taking the national government to court and so on. And so that mechanism is there. That's the reason why there is peace. You don't see matters coming before the court often, precisely because of these intergovernmental structures that were created to resolve these disputes. So I mean, it fails me that it will be a matter that really has to be adjudicated upon by the and in the process wasting the same money that the taxpayers is giving you. If whether is appeal board taking you to court is taxpayers' money, or you take the appeal board to court is taxpayers' money. Even when the two entities, fighting each other in court, both of them, using lawyers, both of them are using the state system. But there's a point that they are also raising, that even when there's not you having made a decision, and I see no reason why the matter could not be raised to the appeals board to say, we have, department has not responded to us, now we are appealing, because the decision is either a decision or non-decision. you know, but because they don't get, they don't have the benefit of what the issues were that made you to, it's well when there's a decision, because at least they can read through your decision and just to make a determination whether you were right in arriving at decision or not. So, but the law says respond within 30 days. I'm surprised that we still get this thing up to this point, that you are not responding within 30 days. Please, can you deal with us? Velem, Dr. Velem?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, if you could just update your research work with this information so that when we meet with them and later we play back all these as matters that remain matters of concern. All right, I know you do that. I'm just emphasizing the point. All right, over to Ms. Barford.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm actually hearing for the first time, Chairperson, that the department has actually taken the appeals board to court. I am not aware of it. But I do want to indicate, Chairperson, that the appeals board has given the department an impression that their findings are binding. So I know of instances where the decision of the appeals board is actually not, it's contradicting the act. And as such, because of this, that we cannot reverse, it means to come to a decision, we must then approach a court of law so as to certify a decision taken. I am not sure whether that emanates from that understanding which was given by the appeals board, that their findings are binding to the department, and the only relief we have is to have that finding certified by a court of law. And Chairperson, I am, as I said originally, that I am not familiar with the issue raised. I am willing to then advise the acting director general to actually engage the appeals board so that we can come to some understanding of sorts on this issue. I agree with you, Chairperson, that government departments and entities should not be taking one another to court, and that there are processes that can be followed to mitigate and consider the issues that might be raised where you don't see eye to eye using the intergovernmental framework. So I am willing to then say to the committee that this issue is to the table to the acting DG, so that the acting DG can engage in it and report back to the committee. And I would leave it at that.
I'm happy to also leave it at that the matter will be raised and we'll get feedback when we meet next. I'm happy with that approach, Ms. Mafo. And Mr. Morolo, can you respond to the issues that were raised by Ms. Bukos?
Okay, yes, first through you, Honorable Chair. Now the one is of, I think this one pertains to outreach, where now we cannot be, the appeals board does not have access to those, you know, as because of there's no budget, you know, because we need to request for such a budget choice, because many of the military so appeal court, you know, alone, not knowing how to resolve that problems. And they cannot, of course, you know, with the department you know, they need a body like the Appeals Court. It's a pity that, you know, now in fact the department has decided to only give the Appeals Court half a million. And on the question of High Court application, this matter was also discussed, you know, in October, you know, with our chairperson and the deputy minister, the acting director general, Mukwebi, at the meeting, you know, at our quarterly meeting with the honorable deputy minister, you know, to emphasize the very same, you know, problem that, you know, the department cannot take the appeals board military veterans to court, because we all, you know, report to the same minister. So it was stretched out and we agreed. That is the reason, you know, why the process, another process, you know, was incorporated in the appeals board, you know, rules and regulations. And now it was so, you know, this matter is known by all the management which attended at the SGMV, which attended that meeting of the 18th of September. And then also those, you know, regulations, amended rules and regulations, were forwarded to legal services and were also forwarded to the acting director general after being signed. But now, the case I'm talking about, the affidavit, founding affidavit, was signed as recently as on the 21st of February 2021. That is something, of course, which I cannot, you know, understand.
Okay. Let's just leave.
I don't know what, you know, what's happening there, because if the acting director general, Mrs. Mafu, does not know about this, you know, popular decision, I don't know what is happening. But, you know, I think our appeals board secretariat should make it a point to forward those amended rules and regulations.
All right.
To Mrs. Mafu. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, no, thank you very much, Mr. Mororo. I think we leave it on the note that Ms. Mafu is going to follow up on this matter in particular, and then report back to the committee. It concerns us, and it's the last thing we'd want to see the department doing, taking one entity of the department to court and wasting our meager resources. So we will follow up on this one. It's certainly not something that is acceptable. Mr. Marolo, are you the same committee whose term expired in July last year?
Yeah, I started with the appeals board in 2015.
About June, July, thereabout.
Yeah, June, July, yeah. And then we were present here, you know.
Yes, so you are now on a month-to-month?
No, it was the contract was for 18 months. It will expire in December.
Was extended, oh, I see, was extended.
I just wanted to highlight something very important.
We've run out of time. Sorry, yes. In fact, we're over time by 12 minutes. I'm sorry. But you can just quickly state it. I don't want to shut you
down. No, just, you know, yeah, to make the department aware that, you know, the appeals board is just going to plead, you know, that those applications were issued prematurely because they have not followed the process. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so you are lucky. You know your other sibling, the council, was terminated upon reaching the end of the term. Is that true, Ms. Mafu? We no longer have the advisory council in office now.
The advisory council was terminated, Chairperson. There was an advert and there was shortlisting, and it's up to the minister to now appoint the advisor.
All right, colleagues, I think it's safe to end the meeting. I'm sorry that we have gone over time by 15 minutes, and but I thought we must allow this. The matters are concerning. Is willing to listen to this and then take it up with the acting director general. We'll then get feedback of that from next time when we meet with them. Brian, have we concluded the agenda? I think we have. Thank you so much, colleagues. Mafu, thank you very much. Please convey my appreciation to your team. Colleagues, thank you very much. I've taken more of your time. With that, I invite you for lunch.
Thank you very much.
Thank the venue.
Thank you very
much. Bye-bye, colleagues. Thanks.
It's very important.
Green.